Hi there, I'm Wendy Garrett, and this is Conscious Living on Empower Radio. Thanks for tuning in. I appreciate you listening to us. I appreciate your time, your energy, your support. And really, there's some amazing people that we are surrounded by. It's so hard to find who might have the best piece of information that would be most helpful for us at any particular time. But when we do find those people, there's a sense, there's a connect, there's this inner knowing that, hey, I need to pay attention. One of the people I have connected with, because this is an individual thing, everybody has to go with their own inner gut on these kinds of bits of information and our conscious connections, is, and I really love his stuff. He's been doing this for quite a while. Me finding him right now doesn't mean he hasn't been busy. Hank Wesselman. He has tremendous background as a paleoanthropologist and a shamanic teacher. One of the things that he has done in the latest book, The Bowl of Light, is give us the benefit of accessing wisdom that's been here for eons in the Hawaiian culture. And Hank, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. If you're listening along, you can check out the sharedwisdom.com website. Hank, what the story of how you got to where you are could probably take up another 6 hours. But bottom line, you're following your own path, and you end up working with a shaman who passes his talking stick to you. Basically, that's how my interpretation of it is. And you're here to share that message with the
Well, this was an extraordinary encounter in my life. In my ordinary life, I'm a very mainstream anthropologist, and I work with an international team of scientists in East Africa in the Great Rift Valley, primarily in Ethiopia, in search of answers to the mystery of human origins. What I do is I go out to these sites where important discoveries have been made, like the recently described fossil form Ardipithecus ramidus, who made the cover of National Geographic last July. I go out to these sites and I analyze the microvertebrate fossils which can be found there, can be recovered, and I reconstruct paleoenvironments of these sites at the time they were laid down. I've been doing this for about 40 years, so I've gotten to rub elbows with a lot of the greats, like members of the Leakey family and Don Johansen, the guy who found Lucy, and Tim White, who's the current director of the expedition I work for now. Now, I mention this because for me to write a book like my first book, Spirit Walker, was unusual, to say the least. Those of your listeners who have read Spirit Walker, it came out 15 years ago now. It's the story of how I went crazy in Hawaii back in the 80s. You know, I sort of look back on it.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of shake my head because, you know, here I was living on my farm in Hawaii, raising children, you know, living with my wife, teaching at the local branch of the University of Hawaii. And I began to have these spontaneous visionary experiences, usually at 4 o'clock in the morning, in which my conscious awareness was drawn into connection with the mind and soul of another man. And when these connections were established, it was as though I was him, as though I was looking out through his eyes at a world I'd never seen before. And to make things really sticky, I could pick up this guy's thoughts, his emotions, his memories. I began to learn a great deal about him right from the start. And he seemed to be completely unaware of the fact that I was there. It was like spirit possession, but I was the one who was doing the possessing. To make things even stickier, this man, whose name is Nainoa, is the descendant of Hawaiian voyagers who landed on the western coast of North America approximately 5,000 years after the collapse of Western civilization. Now, that's pretty far out.
See, that's mind-blowing.
For a mainstream scientist to publish a book about these experiences, what happened was these developed into an ongoing continuum that lasted for more than 20 years. And so eventually a trilogy resulted. The first book was called Spirit Walker, the second Medicine Maker, and the third was called Vision Seeker. Now, this was 1995. Bantam Books published that book, Spirit Walker, and it would later be published in 13 languages. I mean, this kind of blew me away. Now, this man, Halemakua, had read my book, Spirit Walker. And in 1996, I was invited to speak at an institute on the Big Island of Hawaii. You know, it's interesting. When you write a book, people are interested in what you have to say. Before you write a book, nobody cares what you have to say. It's one of those strange phenomena. But, you know, I checked it out, and on the 28th of December, almost at the end of the year, Jill and I and the children were on the Big Island for Christmas. And so she and I drove up to this institute, and there were about 50 people who came to hear what I had to say. At that time, the institute was based in this beautiful Frank Lloyd Wright house, which had just been built, which was really striking, you know, with sweeping views of all the volcanoes. And just before my talk, which was going to be a rather academic talk about the transformational community, that's us. That's you and me and everybody out there listening to what we're talking about. And we're actually a huge community. Paul Ray and Sherry Ruth Anderson wrote a book about us 10 years ago called The Cultural Creatives. And at that time, he estimated that we represent probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 40% of the population, which means, you know, about 80 to 100 million people in the United States alone. That's not a small number, and it appears to be growing. So I was going to talk about the beliefs and values and trends that we hold dear. Be with me. Everybody seemed interested in what I had to say. And just before my talk, the door opened and in walks this big Hawaiian man. Now, Makua, as he was generally known, was about half a head taller than me and considerably more robust. He has the great big white beard that flowed down his chest and a big white ponytail down his back, and he had this magnificent carved walking stick in front of him. And he came in, was introduced to my wife and myself by our hosts, and I was literally kind of awestruck because I'd heard about this guy Makua for years. But, you know, I'd never met him. You know, when you're living here in the islands, you just don't, you know, look somebody up in the phone book and call them because as an authentically initiated kahuna elder, at that time, Makua didn't talk on the phone. So, you know, he came in. Everybody was quite impressed. You know, Makua was a very impressive-looking man. And there were about four, five, six more Hawaiian men with him, all with beards and ponytails. And they had their wives with them. This was a very good sign because it meant I would not be turned into a pillar of salt, at least not that day.
Uh-huh.
Now those
were... You weren't a heretic, in other words. You had to be a little bit intimidated by that.
Well, you know, those who have read Spirit Walker will remember that I included some kahuna mystical knowledge in that book. And, you know, I was a little uneasy about doing this because I know that indigenous people have mixed feelings about outsiders trespassing into their spiritual traditions. And I knew that sooner or later the kahuna families might send somebody in to look me over. Well, this is the day that it happened. Now, this man Makua was well known all across Polynesia. You know, when he'd get off the plane in Tahiti, he'd be mobbed at the airport by people who wanted to see him, who wanted to talk to him. The same in New Zealand, the same in Easter Island, or Raiatea, or Huaheine, or Rarotonga, and so forth and so on. This man, in many ways, was kind of like the Dalai Lama of Polynesia because of his exceptional genealogy. He was a seventh-generation direct descendant of King Kamehameha, as well as a seventh-generation direct descendant of a high chief named Keuwa, who was very beloved in Hawaii 200 years ago. Now, this guy traveled extensively in his elder years. I mean, he sat on stage with the Dalai Lama at the United Nations in New York. So this just wasn't any kahuna had come to hear me talk. This was the big kahuna. Now, this was intimidating, as you've indicated. And so, before I gave my talk, you know, I thought this would be a good time to check in with my spiritual allies, because in addition to being an anthropologist, I'm also a shamanic teacher and practitioner, and have been involved in this tradition for, well, this is the 29th year of my apprenticeship, let's put it that way. So I breathed a short prayer to my allies and then launched into my talk. Now, this did not escape the notice of this Hawaiian elder. I had inadvertently extended myself into correct protocol, you would always give a small prayer, which is called pule in Hawaiian, before you begin a talk. So I talked for about an hour and a half. And being an academic lecturer, you know, I've taught at universities and colleges all over the place, it's not too difficult for me to keep on talking once I get started. So at the end of my talk, I got this strange feeling that Makua had come to say something to me. And he'd been following my words throughout my entire lecture. And so I had this kind of pulling feeling on my soul that he wanted to say something. But I didn't know what the correct protocol was. And for indigenous elders, protocol is everything. So I turned to him and I said, Elder Makua, I don't know what the correct protocol is, but I've got this feeling that you want to say something. Would it be correct for me to ask you to speak? Silence in the room. Now, this was a man who traveled in the company of many generations of his ancestors in spirit, who were constantly advising him. So I watched him momentarily blank out as he checked in with his inner advisors. And after a few moments, he reappeared and stood up, and he looked at me across the room, and he said, a friend of mine sent me your book, Spirit Walker, and I read it. Silence. You know, you could have heard a pin drop in the room. You know, this was high noon in Polynesia. This was the moment of truth. He said, I read it again, just to make sure I got it right. And then I went down to the beach. I took your book, and I put it down on the sand, and I called in the ancestors, and we had a talk about you. Silence. Ancestors asked me.
Yes.
Yeah. He said, the ancestors asked me what your name is. And so I told him, your name is Wesselman, Hank Wesselman. And he smiled, and he said, ancestors told me I wasn't pronouncing your name right. Now, I'm going to say something from a place of sharing, not from a place of ego. He looked at me and he said, the ancestors told me that your name is really Vessel Man, that you're a vessel like the canoe. And he's looking at me to see if I'm getting it yet. And I'm slowly going into shock because I'd been expecting him to say something to me like, you know, you're not Hawaiian. You really shouldn't be writing about us. And he would have been fully in his rights to do so. Now, I didn't know this, but Makua was very clairvoyant. And he's reading my mind as all these thoughts are running through. So he laughs and he says, you know, don't worry. We Hawaiians don't write. We talk. And we share what we find in our hearts with each other. But in your culture, it's the tradition to write books. So I've been instructed to say to you in front of all these people here that we Hawaiians need to support you. Keep spreading the word. You're making my job easier. Well, this was an incredible moment, as you can imagine, Wendy.
Absolutely.
I mean,
people
were very moved. I mean, people were weeping from the emotion of the moment because it's so rare for an indigenous elder of his stature to endorse an outsider. This was the beginning of a most interesting friendship, which is recorded in my book, The Bowl of Light, including the philosophical discourses that we had across the years, in which he literally opened his great heart. And he began to share aspects of the Kohona tradition, which have never been really written about or talked about before. He also gave me permission to share this knowledge. He encouraged us to bring it to the wider world, as he saw us as being part of a very interesting plan. And we can talk about that at some point during our interview.
Well, that's part of this is that the entire book for people that had been at first labeled the cultural creatives or part of the transition, this is a study guide. It gives us an access to the sacred teachings of an indigenous culture who have handed their history down through speaking it, not writing it, and through selected individuals for years, that we're now given this wonderful connection that obviously shows it's time for these kinds of teachings to be revealed, because there's a receptivity now that we're at this threshold of a huge transition to become more enlightened about our past so that we can carry forward the best of it to the future. What is the most, I mean, the chapter on becoming gods is fabulous. The other one, the paths to getting there, there's so much that is in this book. What can we take away from your angle that is maybe the most important thing that you can share? I know that's really a tough one, but...
Well, you know, he came up to me on that first day, and he said to me with great seriousness, we should have a meeting before you leave the island. And so we had our meeting at the crater of Kilauea in Volcano National Park on the last day of the year. That was the day we really got to know each other. And my wife and myself and Makua spent the entire day together talking, beginning to share information with each other, kind of revealing ourselves to each other. I sensed that Makua already knew a great deal about us and that he'd simply come to confirm what he already knew. And this all came to a head late in the afternoon when he reached into the back of his truck and he brought out this beautiful gift wrapped in the traditional way in a tea leaf bundle. It looked like a big green leafy bundle about a foot and a half tall. And so Jill and I opened it. It was a gift. And so inside was this beautiful wooden bowl made of kamani wood. And when we looked at the book, admiring it, Makua said to us, this is your bowl of light. This light was a gift to you from your higher self, your oversoul, your au makua, to use the Hawaiian word, that divided itself before you came into life. He said, when each one of us comes into this world, we come in with a bowl of light, and that light nourishes us and sustains us as we pass through life. But he looked concerned, and he said, you know, but life is long, and whenever we step into the negative polarity, whenever we take something that doesn't belong to us, or we injure someone with our words, or our thoughts, or our actions, it's like we put a stone in our bowl, and some of our light goes out. He said, life is long, and slowly but surely, our bowl of light begins to fill up with stones. Hopefully, we find out what we're doing before it goes dark. And he said, when that happens, we become aware of what we've been doing. He said, you know what you do then? And of course, Jill and I are hanging on every word. And we said, what? And he said, he took the bowl and just turned it over. He said, you dump it out with this big laugh, this big explosion of laughter. He was clearing the bowl. This was his way of saying, this is a way of shedding burdens, all the negative stuff that you, all the grudges, the memories, the traumas, the wounds. It's a way of shedding these burdens and letting them go. He said, it's at that point that you start over. It's at that point that you become a spiritual warrior. Now, he used the word warrior with deliberation because he was in the military for 20 years as a career guy in the Marines. He was in five major wars. The first was Beirut, and the last was Vietnam, where he was shot up very badly through his legs and feet on his 90th patrol behind enemy lines. Here's this man who's 6.5 feet tall who became invisible. He said, you know, the path of the spiritual warrior is a very narrow one, and it's constrained by three sacred directives. He used the word kapu, which is the Hawaiian word for something which is sacred or restricted, but also maybe a directive. It's the same as the Tahitian word tabu. He said, the first kapu is that as spiritual warriors, we must love all that we see with humility. He said, when you love what you see, when you connect with the energy of compassion, this allows you to experience the power of aloha. And as spiritual warriors, we must love all that we see with humility. So I'm thinking to myself, wow, easy one first. And of course, I'd forgotten his clairvoyance. And he burst out laughing. And he said, oh, listen, I worked on that one for 7 years. Yeah. The second kapu, live all that you feel with reverence. Live what you feel. It's what Joseph Campbell meant when he said, follow your bliss and you can't go wrong. With reverence. And this reverence refers to an active respect for everything and everyone that we encounter in life. This is really the foundation stone for indigenous mind, according to Makua. That foundation stone is respect. So I asked him on that day, I said, what's the foundation stone for Western mind? And he looked serious, and he said, the foundation stone for Western mind is dominion, is domination. That means that Western mind and colonial mind are the same. So this was a sobering thought. The third couple, to know all that we possess with discipline. He said, when you know what you possess, and that includes what possesses you, big laugh, you find your self-discipline. And self-discipline is absolutely essential if you're going to walk the spiritual path. This is where so many of our gurus and spiritual teachers have stumbled, because they lack their self-discipline. We don't have to talk about that, because we all know about that. But this was the foundation of his teaching. And it was also the foundation of an extraordinary friendship that developed between us over the last 8 years of his life. Jill and I would spend a few hours with him sometimes, sometimes a few days. We would actually go and stay with him. And he would take us places and show us things and tell us the stories of these sacred sites. And a lot of this is recorded in the book, The Bowl of Light.
I'll tell you what, we're going to have to break the information in this book, just to give you an idea if you're listening along. And of course, we've just baited you now. You have to read the book. You have to go to the website, Shared Wisdom. The Bowl of Light also includes, if you do any kind of intuitive work, if you are a channeler, if you are a psychic, there's some information in terms of being discerning the source of your information and what it takes to be able to do that. I think it's incredibly powerful. And, of course, Hank can tell you himself how important this is. Hank, is there anything? Does Makua speak through you? We have about a minute left. Is it something that you still are connecting as you give out his information through sharing this book?
I've come to accept that there's a connection between us. I seem to have this ongoing connection with his spirit, because he comes to me in my directed meditations when I'm very much awake, as well as in my dreaming while I'm asleep. And so the conversations that we had in life are ongoing, for which I'm very grateful.
Is there something that you at this point in our time, in our history, what's the most valid contribution as individuals that we can make to the collective?
Well, we have to accept the fact that we're all part of a plan that the ancestors set into motion in the mythic past, a plan that they originated and are now supporting, and it's playing out in our time. We are all involved in this plan.
I tell you what, I appreciate your time, and then we go on with Madeline Walker, who's here to talk about the Whale Whisperer and another message from another very important part of our creation, animals. This is Empower Radio.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on, and lost cats stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the Lost Cat Magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See? That's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a Lost Cat Magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventor
Hey, parents!
Foundation,
finding it hard
Council.
To communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi, son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak...
I'm here if you want to talk.
...to 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean... A fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
There's a place where a total stranger will give their blood to save your life. There's a place where someone you never knew will save your child from drowning. a place where people will give you food and shelter after a flood. There's a place where, when you need it most, someone will reach out their hand, put it across your shoulder and say, "Everything's going to be okay." That place is called America, where we look out for each other. And it's up to us to keep it that way. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org today.
Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventor
Hey, parents!
Foundation,
finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi, son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak...
I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. A fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
There's a place where a total stranger will give their blood to save your life. There's a place where someone you never knew will save your child from drowning. A place where people will give you food and shelter after a flood. There's a place where, when you need it most, someone will reach out their hand, put it across your shoulder and say, "Everything's going to be okay." That place is called America, where we look out for each other. And it's up to us to keep it that way. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org today.
The odds of a young girl being discovered by an industry insider while singing to herself pumping gas? 1 in 300 million. The odds of the daughter of a clergyman from Severn, Maryland spending 11 weeks at number one on the U.S. singles charts? 1 in 19 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of selling over 40 million records? 1 in 800,000. And the odds of this musician and performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 150. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn the signs of autism at AutismSpeaks.org. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen.
Hi there, this is Wendy Garrett, Conscious Living on Empower Radio, and a tremendous interview we just had with Hank Wesselman. It's never a dull moment. A reminder that we are not necessarily in charge, no matter how much we would like to think we are.
Next guest, Whale Destroyer, Madeline Walker, that's the title of her book. It's on healing messages from the animal kingdom to help mankind and the planet. And there's also a CD that goes along with this, an audio version of several different types of meditations you can do to make your own connections. It's wonderful because her voice is fabulous. She's done a magnificent job on this. Not everybody has one of those voices that's made for audio, but Madeline, you do.
Thank you.
Just a heads up, you've got a career in that if you would like.
Well, it's been wonderful, creating the meditations, well, channeling the meditations, but, working obviously with Jerome, who does all the music and the sound, and we're busy working on the next one, so I can't wait to get that one out as well.
Oh, and that's, you can give us a tease, what is that?
The new one that we're working on now is called Fearless. It's about releasing fear from our being. And one of the meditations is about dolphin forgiveness, because I had a message from the dolphins I was with out in Egypt in November, which will be in the next book, about going back in time to heal ourselves, to release and forgive ourselves so we can be truly whole and go forwards in total empowerment. So that's a very, very powerful meditation. So we're hoping to get that into a big mind, body, spirit sort of new world music company. So we've just sent out some demos now. So hopefully someone's going to go with it and take it on for us.
Okay. Now, just to backtrack a bit, the book is The Whale Whisperer, and mm-hmm. Madeline's website, An Exchange of Love. You can connect there and find out more about Madeline. She's an animal communicator and a human empowerment coach. And what she will do is help you make your own connections, set up a way for you to become more fluent in conversing with not just animals, but all sorts of energy, all sorts of other types of conscious beings. And that there's really, our language is so ill-equipped to handle this stuff, but hey, I'm giving it my best effort. when you started, I mean, you cover the gamut in here. You cover star beings, you cover animals, you cover rocks, you cover the entire kingdom out there. What's your favorite form of connecting with this other source of information?
Everything, really. Everything is such a blessing. I just love all of it. I love being in the ocean with large creatures, being next to a humpback whale or a whale shark. Our giant manta ray is almost indescribable. I have to find a way of doing it to write about it, but it's almost indescribable because they are so accepting and so generous and so trusting and just give so much love. And it's just mind-blowing, really. That's just something else, you know, just to sort of be in there, immersed in their aura, in their energy is really hard to describe. And it just blows you away, really.
Well, and on the back of the book, you have a picture of you swimming with an elephant, and that had to be absolutely extraordinary.
Incredible. I mean, to be able to free dive underneath and look up and see an elephant above you in the crystal clear water, and such a beautiful elephant, that was just, again, an amazing experience, and I just feel so blessed to be allowed, you know, by the creatures to be that close and to allow into their energy field and to hear their thoughts and to be privileged to be able to convey their messages, because I've been so driven to get these messages out there, to spread their word and to try and help sort of mankind, you know, just listen to what the animals have to say and how much they want to help us and the planet. So it's been a real mission to record
just
these messages.
The interactions that you have with each animal, it's very clear that they each have a unique personality. There's not one, you know, it's not all the same thing repeated over and over again. They have unique messages, like the experience with the elephant. You got some information that in redirecting this back to the connection there, there were some things that you wanted to help heal, and it was like, no, that isn't necessary. It's fine the way it is. Can you share a little bit of
that? Yeah, absolutely. I believe that animals have like there's obviously a collective consciousness, but I feel the species have like their own kind of collective consciousness. Like there's an elephant consciousness, there's a whale consciousness or cetacean consciousness. And there are, within there are very special individuals that seem to be, I don't know, sort of way keepers, way showers. And this elephant that I swam with, he was a very, very special elephant being. And he, as I said, he was carrying man's pain. He said he was holding that energy for us. And I was, if I tuned into him for just a few seconds, I was just in tears because it was so profound and so painful. And I really felt, I must do something about this. I must try and help him. But I got told, no, this is his work. This is what he's doing. It's not for you to try and interfere and impose your will. You know, he's here to help you, not the other way around. You know, this is a very, very huge sentient being that's working on a massive, massive soul level.
What is it that you are drawn to in these connections? How do you determine where you're going to go and what's going to happen next?
I just see what unfolds, really. I just you know, I just hear about things that are coming up, or I get asked. I mean, I'm going out to Canada the end of this month to work with a herd of horses in Kamloops, and I'm working with the horses to help empower people. It's going to be a most amazing week. I'm so excited about it. But that, these are just things that come out of the blue. I've also been asked to go out to Panama to facilitate a group with humpbacks and dolphins out there. And, you know, it's just amazing because I suddenly just get an email or a message on Facebook saying, hey, do you want to come out and do this? And I'm going, yes, too right. You know, I can't wait to get there. So it's just, I think the universe is just allowing things to just unfold, and I just get these opportunities that are just such a blessing, and you know, just a huge privilege to be asked to go and do it. And you know, I'm also going out to Mexico again in August to swim with the giant mantas and the whale sharks again, because I feel it's important. I just feel I need to go and physically be with them again. The beauty of connecting with the animals is that you don't necessarily need to be with them physically, but sometimes it just has to be that powerful to really get their messages home, and I need to sort of really feel their energy and what they're trying to explain to me. You know, sometimes we're playing catch up with these incredible creatures.
Now, one of the places you visited, you came to the States and you visited Arizona, one of the places that I feel a strong connection with and have had so much information given to me as a result of being there and in that space was Sedona. What was your experience there?
It's just a totally, totally magical place, isn't it? And I went there with a lady to do some planetary healing work, and I was working with what I call light crystals. They're sort of like etheric crystals, and I feel they're placed in my hands like sort of orbs, and they can be different colors. And I was working with some very beautiful light blue orbs that I felt I needed to place into the ground there. But it had a very sort of outer planetary feel about it there. We just felt so many presences in the vortexes. And I was guided to visualize using what I call sun disks, which are huge golden disks. And I was guided to visualize placing them at various points in an arc in the valley, one of the valleys there. And they appear to be like transmitters but also receivers of energy. I hadn't really any idea quite what they were doing, but I just got guided to do this work. And so I do as I'm told. And I've since used these sun disks as sort of protective shields between people and animals to prevent energy drain, that sort of thing. So it was a wonderful introduction to working with sun disks, and I write about in the book about just how powerful they are in a very gentle way. They're not about sort of sending energy back to anybody, anything negative. It's just about preserving people's energy and protecting them, and also animals between other animals and animals between maybe less positive owners, that sort of thing, to give them strength and empowerment.
Now, you're connected. Your sense of connection seems to be most conducive to the lion. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I have huge connection to lions. I feel very, very connected to the ancient lion beings and sort of Sirius and all those sort of weird and wonderful things. And I think I've always dreamt about lions, as I wrote about in the book, all my life. And I think going to Egypt, connecting with Sekhmet, the lioness warrior goddess, just blew the lid off everything in my life, just completely turned my life upside down. And then having connected with the sacred white lions in South Africa, that again was just another huge step up on my learning curve, really. They're just so awesome, which is why I wanted to use their meditations in the CD, because I feel that the whales are the guardians of the oceans, but the white lions are guardian of the land masses. And the great white lion that was in the book, Mandla, I feel he's driving me forwards and helping me unfold, the commitment I made in a mission statement when I went to visit the white lions was to be the voice of truth for the animals.
Now, the website, Exchange of Love, that's the book I talked with you about first. You had in this book a way of kind of getting all the information together and giving us an insight into, I think, what was one of the catalysts for your experiences, and that was the divorce, you know, separating and having your world turned upside down. Can you share, I think this is a common theme when people start connecting to these other senses of being, awareness, this higher guidance, all that, that comes at a point in our lives when we are at a crossroads, a turning point, an upheaval, and that seems to be part of your process as well. Can you give us an idea of how that happened?
Absolutely. You hear it so often, people start to really expand in a spiritual way, or just their whole awareness starts and their energy starts to shift. The person that's been sharing their life with them finds that the person that they married or that met, first of all, isn't the same anymore, and on an energy level is very different, and I think they can find it very difficult, very challenging to be with. And it was so hard for me because it happened, my ex-husband just announced one day that he didn't want to go on with the marriage. And at that time, my mother was very seriously ill and about to die. And it felt like my whole world had fallen apart because they were the two people that I loved the most, apart from my children, and also my best friends. And it just felt like in one fell swoop, both those rocks in my life were going to disappear. And it was incredibly hard. There were many other things happening in that one year that were very, very hard. But now I can see the huge gifts that have come from that and have helped me expand, because I don't think I would be doing, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now if I'd still been in the marriage. Obviously, I've had to be not limited as such, but still working within those sort of frameworks. And now I'm lucky enough to have a lot of support for my younger son who's still at home and my animals, that I can actually, you know, go and meet these creatures and travel to these sites and do the work I need to be doing. But it's been a bumpy ride, but so many people that I know that have gone through very similar stories, and it seems to be a common denominator, some might say sadly. Obviously, there's sadness in endings of relationships, but on a soul sort of a level, it's all meant, and for my ex-husband's greater good as well, you know, it's... it is all planned and all meant and a huge gift, and I'm just so grateful now. I can see what I've had to learn from it. You know, it's been all part of an amazing journey.
And I see that as well. It's that we kind of have this expectation somehow, and it doesn't make any sense given the way the world works. Things are just going to go on forever. No topsy-turvy, no upheaval, no, you know, it's all peaches and cream and it's just perfect. And it's like we are surprised that it doesn't work out that way.
Yes, it's a nasty shock.
And endings are written into the program before we get here. So it's like we just still have a difficult time with them. And the dog's barking at the squirrel who's playing outside. So if you know, if you hear her in the background, it's she and the squirrel have this little battle.
My kitten was purring down the phone to Matt earlier on when he rang me to come on the show. So yeah, we've got all these animals sounds off. It's great.
Yeah,
I've got my rescue dog asleep next to me now. She's being nice and quiet, but she might be snoring soon.
Well, and now the other thing too, I read your son, and I have a friend who can do this as well. He senses, and you, when you're out, he can sense the presence. You had a tour of the Rocky Mountain Park, I believe, is where you were. Anyway, I was trying to remember what it was in Canada.
And that's right. We did the Rocky Mountaineer because he's obsessed with railways. So we did all the Lake Louise thing and Banff and Jasper, and just absolutely loved it.
And at that point, that's when you guys were able to sense the bears, and
absolutely. Well, I could feel them, and he just suddenly announced that he could. He just said, "Oh, there's bears around," and he could spot the bears before we had a sort of coach ride through the Rockies, and he would just say, "There's a black bear up there," and nobody would believe him. And then we'd turn the corner with the coach, and there would be a black bear, and everybody thought he was just making it up. And then when we were walking through woodland, I got a sense of a bear, and he just said, "There's a bear around, Mummy. I can feel it." I said, "Where do you feel it?" And he said, "I feel it in my tummy," and he's like, he was sensing it through his solar plexus. And he's a pretty amazing child. Well, he's not a child, he's pretty big now, but he's so aware of the animals, and the animals just absolutely love him, and it's amazing.
I have a friend who does that as well. And it is very incredible because you'll say, well, their deer are here and there are turkey over there and you can't see them. And then eventually they come into sight. And it's just, I believe that's what a lot of the indigenous cultures had connected to and are still in connection with the ones that are not encroached by, you know, Western ways. That's part of our own heritage that we are reconnecting to and relearning on a different level, kind of an enhanced level now that there's so much more interference in the, I think, the form of these kinds of transmissions, radio, electrical. We have to kind of work around that to reconnect with all of the natural elements. Can you suggest a way of, for people who want to connect with you, the next step in their own connections with animals, what might be helpful for them to tune into, or, you know, aside from reading your book?
I think it's just trying to get out into nature, or if you're living in a city, just maybe try and get to a park and feel some, just feel the energy of the trees, try and sit quietly and listen to the birds or the wildlife, or if you have a pet, just sit quietly and just imagine sending out a wave of love from your heart to your pet's heart, and just send so much love that you can manage along that wave or that line or that chord, whatever you might imagine, and just listen, and maybe have a notepad and just write down whatever comes to mind. And if you want to send a question out, just ask a question and just see what happens. It's quite amazing what comes back, and you might just think, oh, I'm just imagining it, but that's how it starts. So we can all do this. It's nothing special for me. It is very special, of course, but it's not that I'm special to be able to do it. We can all do it. It's just, as you say, we've been sort of brainwashed into either that it's a bit weird or flaky or, you know, just strange, or, as you say, there's so much interference with westernized sort of communications and ideas. If we can just sort of, you know, look through that and really get back to connecting with the earth, it's quite amazing what we can learn and what we need to really get back in touch with.
And that's where the audio comes in handy with the meditations that you offer. You really have some powerful connections that are, some of us, we learn in different ways. Some of us are tactile. We have to touch it, sense it. Others hear it. Others see it. But there's something for everybody in this information when you connect with animals, because it's all the senses are enhanced and it requires you to become more conscious of the present moment, and your pets can help you access this as well. Like our dogs we're talking about today. She lets me know other things when I have to work with ghosts or anything like that, then she's the first one to let me know, okay, there's something else here. There's something else present. She gives me a heads up.
Like I said, we're just playing catch up a lot of the time to these animals. You know, they're just so amazing.
Well, they don't have to go out and get a job and make a living and, you know, and pay taxes and figure out what the politicians are doing and or not. And, you know, what's the best laundry detergent that we can use, or yeah. Okay, fine.
Yeah, we have a lot of clutter that we have to deal with.
We have to sift through a lot of extra. And
yeah,
fortunately, you know, they can remind us that, hey, it isn't about the extra. It's about the here and now, and be present now. And the extra just takes care of itself. Madeline, I appreciate you talking with me. I love your information. And for people who are learning how to do this themselves, everybody goes at it in a different way. The benefit of tapping into somebody else's information is to see maybe where they had a roadblock or where they had a breakthrough. And then saying, okay, this works in this way for them. How can I work it for me? And doing it as you have done, Madeline, going through and saying, for the highest good, I want to be available and do this for the highest good. You know, that's kind of a qualifier that keeps us working at a level that we're asking it to be of service and with
Definitely.
The best possible.
You're always coming from a place of love for the very highest good. You can't go wrong.
So now, the book is available, and along with the audio CD, I through sounds. It's Finn Horn, and then of course anywhere on the net, and also from Madeline as well. But if you want to check out her website, An Exchange of Love, you can find out more about what she does. And I put a video up on the site, consciousforlife.com. I'll probably add more to that as well. Just, you know, it's always different. I can say so and so does this, but then when I have a talk with you, it's a whole different. You know, it's just that connection. It really makes a difference when you have an opportunity to interact with somebody and feel that energy. And I really appreciate all that you are doing and all that you will continue to do in breaking these kinds of barriers that we have, thinking that we're separate. When there is a way for us to connect, we just have to trust that we have it within us to break
absolutely.
The code.
Absolutely. It's a privilege. I feel very blessed to be part of that.
All right. Thank you, Madeline. I appreciate the time and look forward to talking with you again, because you just gave us a clue that you have another book in the works. And of course, guess what? We would love to hear about that too.
Another CD. Yeah, it's very exciting.
Okay, fine. CD. Whoops.
And book. I'm writing. Yeah, there's two more books in the pipeline, and we're working on the next CD now.
Okay, I would just love to travel with you one of these days, okay? Because you
mean
some really.
It would be fantastic. We'd have such an adventure.
Well, if that ever is an opportunity, believe me, I would love to do that. I think you keep company with some amazing beings, and thank you for your time.
Well, thank you very much as well. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
And that's it for this edition of Empower Radio Conscious Living. I appreciate your time too. You can check out more information at the Empower website or talkingtonightlights.com. That's my stuff. Have a wonderful day, and remember to think the highest thoughts. That's what comes back to you. See ya.